As Richard just stated, we are beginning a series of lessons that the elders have asked me to begin, and in a couple of weeks, I believe they're going to take a few lessons. So we consider, well, not as we consider, but as the elders are beginning their selection and appointment of elders. What I want to begin with is, as I was preparing this, I thought, if I was sitting in your place, and I often put myself in your place, and we're going to be talking about coming elders, well, it's time to just put myself on cruise control, because it didn't have anything to do with me. It's about any of you who might be elders, and you need to be listening, and the rest of us can go to sleep for a little while. But I don't want you to do that, because godly leadership is something that every Christian man and woman should strive to grow and be like. Because what Christian leadership is, we're going to see today, godly leadership is, it's fundamental to being a Christian. Because godly leadership has more to do with your character than your position. A lot of times we think leadership is when someone is appointed or placed or moved to a position. And that, in a sense, is, but in the Christian home, in the Christian church, your character is of prime importance. Long before you are placed in a position. We just finished our yearly marriage retreat. And it was good. It was great. I thanked Robert and Stella and thanked them again for coming and sharing with us. And back a year or so ago, when we were out searching for someone to speak, the Callens and Julia and I, we all went to, I think it was Rome, Georgia. Beautiful campus up there, and we listened to a few hours of their marriage seminar that they were giving, and the one thing that I really appreciated then and now is how they bring us to the scriptures over and over and say, if you want to have a great marriage, let's look at the author of marriages and see what he says about marriage, and brings us to the scriptures and say, look, that's how you're to have a good marriage. And the same thing is true with what we're talking about with godly leadership today. If you want to have a thriving marriage, a thriving church, you have to have godly leadership. You may never be an elder appointed to that position, but both husband and wife have leadership functions and places in their homes. And we're going to talk not only what is important for church leaders, but what this applies to husbands, to wives, to the unmarried, to the singles, to those who have single families, children without a husband or without a wife. Every Christian, if you're a Christian, today's lesson applies to you. Biblically, an elder is simply someone who has grown in the grace of God. He's taken on the character of Jesus to such a degree that people, as the church looks to him, they say, that's the type of person I want to follow. That's the type of person I want to become. That's the type of person that's worthy of imitation. And I recognize we're not saying they're Jesus, all right? That's our ultimate goal of imitation. But we need to put flesh on that sometimes and people. A passage says, the older women are to teach the younger women. They're to be that type of example where the younger women are saying, that woman has Christ-like qualities that I want to imitate. Not in perfection. Everyone can look at someone and say, this part I don't like about him, but overall, general direction, that's what we want. Not even the most mature is expected to live perfect in every aspect of life, but a leader is expected to live out are to be living out a cross-perfected life in such a way that others want to imitate him. Anytime I use the word, we're not saying anything like we're not perfect. Always look over at Clyde, make sure that he's, you know, he'll come and correct me later on. Because he was the one that pointed out many times, Hebrews 10 verse 14. For by one sacrifice, that's the cross, he is made perfect forever, that's you, those who are being made holy. We are cross-perfected people. The youngest Christian, when God looks at the youngest to the oldest Christian, he sees people perfect in his sight. And that should motivate you to live. Live for him. But we are in the process of being sanctified, of growing in his grace, of growing up, of becoming Christians, as we become mature Christians, that we look at different people and say, and that person has grown in such a way that I can say that's godly leadership, and that's the person I want to become like. That's the type of person I want to be. We all function in agape love. Fundamentally, God is love. We operate in love, in agape love, and all the characteristics we're going to look at today is an outgrowth of love. Do you realize, and this is hard for some people to grasp, that even rebuke, even correction, even justice, and even anger can be based in love? I've had some sermons on that, and I'm not going to have a sermon on that today, but God isn't love sometimes, and then he's angry sometimes. That's human. That's how we humans operate. But God's love is expressed in justice, and that's good. It's just not the nice characteristics of kindness and patience that are found in love, but every part of the Christian life is founded in God's love. And that's why we have to continually check ourselves to see if we're living according to godly love or worldly love. Are we thinking in worldly ways? Are we living by worldly principles? Or do we live in biblical godly ways and godly principles? And sitting in the church building, it's easy to say, yeah, I want to think like God. I want to live by godly principles and not worldly principles. But when we get away from here, we just slide into it. And the illustration I have here is just floating down a river. The world is like a slow-moving river. You don't even realize how it influences you. And I was thinking about this today. Television influences me, and I don't even own a TV. I haven't had a TV since 1992. And that's nothing to glorify in. It's just that we moved to Fiji, and they didn't have TVs over there. Well, they had some TVs, one station, but it wasn't worth it to buy a TV. So we didn't get a TV, and when we moved back to the States, I asked Julie, you want to get a TV? And she says, not really. So when I want to watch the Super Bowl, I go over to my son's house or my mother's house. But as little as I watch TV, I don't know all the shows. People have name shows and this actor, you know, I see it on the internet. A certain actor says something or does something or gets their hair color changed or something, and it's on the news. And I look at it and I have no idea who that person is. But I know that it influences me because it's part of our culture. Everyone who looks at television and watches TV, and the little bit I do, we kind of move along like a slow-moving river, and I get caught in that river too. And I'm slowly drifting unless I think, and I have to go upstream instead of downstream. That's part of learning how to think like a Christian, learning how to think like God, learning how to put God principles in my life instead of the wisdom of the world. Without biblical God love in our marriages, they will be weak. Without these principles in the church will be ill. Our lives will follow the pattern of the world. Our marriages will follow the pattern of the world. Our church will follow the pattern of the world instead of the glory that God desires for us. C.S. Lewis said this in... What's that book? Screwtape Letters. Hell is a state where everyone is perpetually concerned about his own dignity and advancement, where everyone has a grievance, where everyone lives the deadly, serious passions of envy, self-importance, and resentment. I've counseled people, and I'm sure you Wilsons have counseled people, who have said, my marriage is hell. And this is what's going on, right? You know, my life is hell. I've heard that, and that's not swearing. They're describing the state of their emotions, and the reason is because they're so wrapped up in themselves and what's going on with them and their own personal dignity, and have they been offended, their own, you know, being offended, and envy and self-importance and resenting people. And if you live like that, you're going to live in a state of hell. And on the other hand, the opposite, of course, is love. And then to the degree that we live in sync with God's love, I will live in heaven. To the degree that I live out of sync in God's love, I'm going to be in the state of hell. And one of the manifestations of God's love is this, that is so foundational to the Christian life that we're going to look at today, that is an outgrowth of God's love. It's a foundation to a Christian marriage. It's a foundation to godly leadership that we're looking for in this church. It's this principle: be a servant. This is so counterculture. We say it in church, and it's nice. But this is not. The stream of our culture moves us away from this. We have jokes about servants. Here's one. What kind of jokes does a butler tell? You know, a butler is a servant, right? I know some of you have butlers. All right, I know some of you don't. What kind of jokes do butlers tell? Clean jokes. Think about it. Clean. Yeah, they clean. They're always clean. All right. It's a first grade joke. You know, I have little grandchildren, all right? Why did a butler wear two jackets when he was painting the house? He was told to put two coats on. All right. The little ones like those jokes. I like those jokes. But we make fun, you know, of butlers and jokes and, you know, servant jokes. We put down people who serve. We want to be the person to be served. And learning to serve, I believe, is so fundamental to the Christian walk. When you become a Christian, one of the very first things you learn, the first steps you take, is how to be a servant. And it's awkward at first. It doesn't feel right because you've been, you know, going down the other road for so long. And, you know, it's cute to watch a toddler take their first steps. Our youngest granddaughter's two now. About a year ago, she started taking her first steps. Oh, it's so cute. I got videos of it. And we love that, to see our little ones take those first awkward steps. But, you know, if you're 40 years old and you're walking like that, that's really sad. I mean, that's we know something serious is wrong when an older person walks like a toddler. And in the same way, we get excited as new Christians. You know, you come in, we had this marriage retreat, and some new marriages are just learning how to do these things. And they're just learning how to serve one another. And that's awkward. It doesn't feel right. And we see them stumble around. And you know, as an older Christian, I look at that, and I rejoice that they're stumbling and bumbling, but they're trying. But what's really hard is working with those marriages and those people who have been married for 50, 40, 30, 20 years, and they're still stumbling around, because I think you haven't learned this very basic principle. It's like Jesus is saying, hey, it's time to grow up. It's time to grow up. You want to have a mature congregation, your leaders need to be grown. You want to have a mature marriage, you need to grow up. Stop being childish. And it's evidence of maturity. As we learn what it means to be a servant, we learn how to be mature in Christ. The servant attitude is so fundamental that without a very practical application of it, we're nothing more than a social club here. Get together, have a good time. We do. We have a really good time. I want one day, Ed, for you to get up here, you know, and everyone's visiting like you did today, and you don't stop them. And just keep going. Let's see how long it goes. And we'll have a real short sermon that day. Maybe have just one song and the Lord's Supper, and then I'll say, God bless you, and, you know, the Lord bless and keep you, and we'll go home. I really wonder how long we would talk before people would go, isn't it time to start? 11:30, 12, I don't know. Because we love each other, and we like to be with each other, and we fellowship with each other, and it's really good stuff. And that's wonderful to have that, but if we don't have this in our lives, being a servant, we're just this fun social club, a group of people that like to get together. And I want to be more than that. I want to be a family of God that's growing and maturing, that the elders are teaching the youngers and helping them. So we're going to look at a scripture that's so fundamental to this, and it's my favorite. If I were to choose a favorite story, maybe this is my favorite. If it's not, it's in the top 10. But look over, if you want to turn your Bibles to Mark chapter 10, verse 35 through 45, it's worth reading every word, and we're going to read it together. And then we'll kind of break it down a little, not as much as I want to, but we'll look at it briefly. And many, many of you are familiar with this, but stay with me. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. What do you want me to do for you? He asked. They replied, let one of us sit on your right hand and the other on your left hand in your glory. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with? We can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. But to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared. When the ten heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and the high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Thank you, James and John, for being jerks. And I say that with all sincerity, and I'll tell them that one day maybe. And the reason I say this is because Jesus often taught many, many times in a given circumstance. And I got thinking this morning, if James and John had not been so selfish and self-centered, I wonder if we would have this. It was an outgrowth of their self-centeredness that we have this wonderful biblical principle. I'm sure Jesus would have gotten in there some way. But it just comes to life when you see it in this interaction with people. You see the attitude of James and John. It's a me-first attitude. I want to be first. I love this. This is just so human. They come to Jesus and they say, teacher, that's a very nice word, rabbi. Butter him up a little bit. I think over in Matthew, they have their mama talking for them. That's always advantageous. We want you to do whatever we ask you. Have you ever had anyone ask you that? I have. It's children. It's the little ones. They come to me, daddy, would you do whatever I ask you? What's the answer to that? No. No, the answer is first is, well, tell me what you want. That's really the answer. And then it's usually something they really don't need. They don't know what they're asking for. And that's exactly what happens here. We want you to do whatever we ask. And he says, and Jesus doesn't say no. He doesn't say yes. He says, well, tell me what you want. And they say, well, we want one, you know, we know that you're the king. And so when you come in your glory, we just want one of us on the right-hand side and one on the left. We're brothers. They might have even been related to Jesus. There's a possibility there. And so they're saying, you know, this makes sense. You're the king and you need a right-hand man, you need a left-hand man. Put us there. And I won't go into the things he said. They said, well, Jesus basically said, well, can you go through what I'm going to go through? And they said, oh, sure we can. They had no clue what was going on. And he said, well, you will, but right and left, that's not the point. And then it stops there. And then I thank the other 10 for being jerks too. They got upset. It says, when the 10 heard about this, they became indignant. What does that word mean? Indignant. I can't believe you did that. That's what it means. Just the, you know, that, I don't know, some of you roll your eyes and take a deep breath. Cannot believe it. I'm not talking to you. So we're having this problem here. And so thank you, 10, that you did that, because that's when Jesus says, guys, come here. Let's all sit around in a circle. Let's have a talk. And this is what's so important. Verses 42 through 44. If you were to memorize something, this would be great to memorize. You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and the high officials exercise authority over them. I know you can memorize four words. Not so with you. Not so with you. I've preached this before. Some of you weren't here. Some of you were, but you were somewhere else. Maybe you're with me right now. Maybe you're not. Four words. Change your marriage, change your life, change church. Not so with you. Don't be like the world, Jesus is saying. Don't think like the world. Don't act like the world. Don't want to be the boss. Don't be bossy. Don't be arrogant. Don't seek number one position or number two or number three. And leadership at home, leadership in the church, he says, you know how the world is. You know how it is that where the rulers of the world, rulers of the Gentiles, just meant the world, how they boss you around, they lord it over you. The high officials, they exercise authority. They have authority and they exercise it over you. Not so with you. The church that adopts worldly patterns, worldly ways of leadership, is adopting a way that Jesus said, don't do that. Not so, don't do it. Not so with you. And being a slave, being a servant just doesn't make sense to us. Being a servant and being a leader in the world doesn't make a lot of sense. We desire to be great. We desire to be winners. We desire to be number one. And this is the fundamental application of God loving our life, our lives. It's the fundamental exercise of Christian leadership. It's the fundamental essence of Christian living. It's the road to greatness. You want to go down the road to greatness? This is it. Jesus has given the principle. This is the foundation, should be the foundation of our lives. He says this, whoever wants to be great among you. And when I'm with, you know, a couple and we're teaching this, when I'm with a small group, I'll say, who wants to be great here? Raise your hand. And everyone's kind of like, you know, and Julie and I raise our hand. And then they'll look at us like, you arrogant? I was like, no. When you go on your job, do you want to do your best? Do you want to be great at your job? Do you go to work and just say, you know, I'm going to be the worst person here? Do you strive to do a good job? The sin is not in being wanting to be great. That is God placed in you, whoever wants to be great. But here's the problem. The world tells you different ways to be great than God tells you. He says, whoever wants to be great, and every person really, when you think about it, you know, I want to go, when I'm sick, I want to go to a great doctor. I don't want to go to a doctor who says, you know, I was at the bottom of my class, and not that good, and we'll try something. You want to go to a great doctor. You know, if you're going to take tennis lessons, I mean, something simple, tennis lessons, you don't want to go to someone who says, well, I've tried a few times, and I'm kind of good at it. Come on, I'll teach you for $100 an hour. No, you want a great tennis coach. Every area of life, we want people who are great. And he says, in God's kingdom, if you want to be great, you've got to be a servant. That's where the focus is. And he says, whoever wants to be first. Who wants to be first? I swam in high school and college. I played high school sports, basketball and football. I always tried to be last. I was really good at it. No, I mean, I always want to be first. One of my greatest regrets is the last race of my college career, whatever it is. I came in second. 500-yard freestyle. I was in the fourth block. That's the best block. That's the best swimmer. Number four is the best lane. Number five is number two. Guess who beat me? Number five. That's 40 years ago. I still hate it. I want to be first. And he says, okay, you want to be first in God's kingdom? We don't even like the word, do we? Slave. The word is doulos. It's you got in trouble and you needed help. And so you put yourself in voluntary slavery for a period of time to get yourself out of debt. That's what a doulos was. So it's us voluntarily saying, I am enslaving myself, I'm putting myself in your service for a limited amount of time. The limited amount of time isn't the rest of your life. That's a doulos. And the world, the difference is in the world we seek charisma. We want someone who has charisma. We want them to be a good speaker. We want them to be aggressive, type A personality, enthusiastic, a person of vision, bold, strong. And nothing's wrong with any of those things inherently unless they're coming out of not being a servant or a slave to all. You can be a servant and a slave and be bold and aggressive. But it's coming out of love. It's coming out of being a servant. Over in Luke chapter 22, it's a very similar. It's not totally parallel, but it's so similar, it's almost parallel. Verse 24 through 26. All right, I'm gonna put my afterburners over here on. Because the story is so good that I could spend an hour on it. And we just, it's getting warm in here. And I know you're getting hungry. So, and the Wilsons have 4-hour drive. So we'll try and get you out. But what's so interesting about this, Jesus has just introduced them to what we call the Lord's Supper. And the Lord's Supper is a focus on Him, and it's a binding of ourselves to one another. That's the whole purpose of the Lord's Supper. It has its vertical dimension, it has its horizontal dimension. And right as he's done that, and again, I almost have to laugh at this because it's so much like us, it's so much like me. Also, a dispute among them arose of which of them was considered to be the greatest. And I just want to laugh when I see that Jesus has just introduced them to this precious meal of the Lord's Supper, and he said, this is my blood of the covenant. And then they start arguing shortly after that about who's the greatest. And why didn't Jesus pull his hair out? He's just so patient. He says to them, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them. He's already told them this before. And those who exercise authority over them call themselves benefactors. I'm doing this for your own good. I know what's best for you. I'm making this decision for you because I know, and I'm doing it out of love. I'm your benefactor. But you are not to be like that. Not so with you. Instead, who is the greatest among you should be like, I like the way he says this, the youngest. I always give this illustration. We're sitting around in the living room, and Matthew's there, he's a teenager, and Judith is there, she's a teenager, and Angel's there, she's a teenager, and I'm, Mom and Dad are in the living room, and I say, I want a glass of water. Who do I say, name, go get me a glass of water? Do I say, Julia, go get me a glass of water? Nope. Angel, she's the youngest. Angel, give me a glass of water. She jumps up, gets a glass of water. That's what we do with our youngest. And he says, so whoever among you wants to be great, you be like the youngest, the one that's always, yeah, see, youngest one right there. You're always being told what to do, being pushed around. Isn't that right? All of you who are young, poor old you. God has trained you to be like him by being the youngest. In the Renaissance, they had these people called benefactors who would pay artists to, you know, to do their art. But here was the catch to it. They had to do what the benefactor told them to do. Sometimes it turned out good. You know, the Sistine Chapel, the roof of the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel that Michelangelo painted? Yeah, some of you artists know that. That was done because a benefactor told him to do it. I'm glad the benefactor told him to do it. But if he hadn't, he would have been carving. He loved to carve. He loved to carve marble. We'd have more beautiful marble. Let's quickly go through this. Tied to this is Ephesians 5:21 that was mentioned in class this morning. We were to submit to one another. This is Paul's way of saying what Jesus has just said. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And this comes from a word that means yield your rights. Give up your rights. That's exactly what it means. And we're told to submit to God, same word, to rulers, to wives, to husbands, servants, to masters, demons, submit to the apostles. You know, many, many times this word is used in various ways. And the world is so obsessed in determining who's in charge, making sure our rights are not trampled or infringed. And applying it to choosing godly leaders for our elders, I would say there's a passage that says, if you desire this, it's good. You have to desire that shepherd role. That's good. But if you gotta have it, you don't need it. If you gotta have it, Mom's like, what? What'd you say? You know what I'm saying? I've got to have this. Because if you got to do it, not that you desire it to serve others, but you got to have this role, you're not in this position of submission. Christians are told to give up their rights instead of making sure their rights are met. Christians have the greatest right of all. No one else has this right. We have the right to give up our rights. Ask the world. Do you want the right to give up your right? And they go, no, I don't want that right. But Christians, we have the right to give up our rights, to serve others. And it doesn't mean, don't start that. We could have a whole series of lessons on this. It doesn't mean you're pushed around. It doesn't mean that other people trample on you. That's not what submission is. Look at the example of Jesus. He wasn't pushed around. Paul, others, they stood up courageously to authorities, false teachers, and wrong living when they had to. But that's not being unsubmissive. Don't think like the world. You need to think and say, well, what does God's word and what's God's examples of submission are? And a lot of women struggle with this because the next verse says, wife, submit to your husband. But the problem is they're thinking of worldly submission and worldly leadership. But if you have a husband who is determined to serve you and to love you, then every woman I've ever asked this question, when we talk about what that service and that love looks like, we say, can you submit to that? And every time I've asked, they say, yes. That's what I want to submit to. Our problem is, as leaders in the home, we haven't learned how to love correctly, which means we haven't learned to serve correctly. And in the church, we have to do the same thing. Can I submit to that leadership? We want to submit to godly leadership. We want to submit to men who love and care for us, who serve us. It's hard not to submit to a servant. So here we'll sum it up here. The first principle in having godly leaders, a Christian must be a servant and submissive. Let me put it this way. Can you say this? I am a servant. I will submit. Can you say that in your home? Can you say that in church leadership? We're going to get really more specific. I wanted to lay the general principle today of really what it means, and everyone can apply that to their lives. But we get down next week, we're going to look at what does the Bible say about godly elders, godly shepherds, and we're going to get focused down more. But here's the fundamental bottom line. I am a servant. I will submit. And until we learn how to do that, we're going to be immature. We're just going to be childish. Time to grow up. Time to learn to serve. Time to learn to submit. We extend the invitation to anyone who would like to talk to our shepherds. They come forward every Sunday to greet you. If you need to ask for prayers, if you need to ask, hey, I want to be a part of this family, I want to learn how to be one with Christ, we give you that opportunity as we stand and sing this invitation song.